The title is clunky, but the wine talk is smooth. You're listening to the Matt Talks Wine and Stuff with Interesting People podcast.
Hey, everyone, and welcome to the Matt Talks Wine and Stuff with Interesting People podcast. And I'm not going to lie to you. This already ranks as one of the coolest locations to do one of these podcasts. I would already put this up here, hanging out with Ken Forrester in South Africa. It's a different location. I'm in Prince Edward County, but I'm in Carlos Estates. And it's a really cool barnyard, old-timey, almost like you feel like you're in the middle of Prohibition bar. And I am joined by a legend. I'm sure he'll try to push back, but I hope he does. Hey, everyone, and welcome to the Matt Talks Wine and Stuff with Interesting People podcast. And I'm not going to lie to you. This already ranks as one of the coolest locations to do one of these podcasts. I would already put this up here, hanging out with Ken Forrester in South Africa. It's a different location. I'm in Prince Edward County, but I'm in Carlos Estates, and it's a really cool barnyard, old-timey, almost like you feel like you're in the middle of Prohibition bar. And I am joined by a legend. I'm sure he'll try to push back, but I hope he doesn't, with one of the senior executive winemakers of Carlos Estates and so many other wineries. It's Derek Barnett. Derek, thank you so much for being part of the podcast today.
You're very welcome. I'm happy to be here in this crazy building with all these red sofas.
Yeah, it is. What is this? I feel like I should be drinking with Al Capone here.
Exactly right.
I want to do so much with you, just your own journey and a lot of big picture. But let's start little picture. You poured me a Chardonnay. What am I drinking here?
This is we started with a Melville, so it is a 2021, what I call barrel select. So this is barrel aged, barrel fermented, beautifully textured, nicely balanced. All of those good things. Fruit from a small vineyard in Niagara on the Lake. In the Lincoln Lakeshore in Niagara Peninsula. Very special piece.
Let's start here. What is for you in your mind, what are some of the main differences for people want to know between Chardonnay or Pinot from Niagara versus here in Prince Edward County? And I understand, you know, we always have to be careful when it comes to generalizations, but what are some of the different characteristics you find in the wines here in Prince Edward County versus in Niagara?
I think the thing that begins is a little bit about acid. It's a little bit about a little fresher, a little more elegance, if I can use the term. Prince Edward County, they're not so big, so bold, a little bit less alcohol in general. I think elegance is the right term. I think if I wanted to separate them out, a little more flintiness, a little more minerality in the county wines as well that I've had the opportunity to make at least.
What was Sherry's pitch to you back? I think it was like 2015. What was Sherry's pitch for you to come to Carlo Estates?
I don't know. I guess I'd been, you can't see me, but yeah. Out of work.
You out of work. It was a lot of it was by choice. And we'll get to Lely and everything in Melville and what you're doing now. But you out of work, you would always be able to find work.
I guess. The phone rang, and I guess Sherry just asked if I would come and talk to her about making wine for her up here. This was a month, not even 2 weeks after Lely had been sold, and I agreed to come and talk, and nothing else. We sat on the patio by the trailer and talked for a couple hours, and by the time I'd finished, I'd known Sherry and for some time, and Richard, we used to meet up a little every now and again in Ottawa at an event, and we'd sit around and have either dinner or snacks or drinks, and we got on really well. We hit it off. We liked each other's wines. We liked what each other was doing in the wine industry. It seemed like a fit to be able to come and help after Richard had passed away. Mm-hmm. So yeah, after a couple of hours, I said I'd go home, talk to my wife. I wasn't moving up here. My wife told me that. all my family was in St. Catharines area,
yeah.
And that was that. And so, yeah, the pitch was really didn't need to be made too much. It was for me, something I felt I could do and help.
You've made incredible wines at Southbrook, at Laley, your own, that would come a little bit later. Obviously, if you decided after a couple hours of hanging on the porch that you're going to make wine that's several hours drive from where you live now, that's kind of a testament to Sherry, to her passion for wine, and also for the terroir and the potential that is Prince Edward County.
Yeah, I mean, it was a little bit of excitement. I hadn't the thing about trying to travel as a winemaker, you want to go to places when the weather is better, but when the weather is better, you're always busy. So I had hardly ever been to the county to taste and to visit at all. I mean, I don't want to come to the county in the winter time. That's not what I want to do anyway.
Yeah.
And so
it's horrible traffic. 401, the snow, that'd be horrible.
Yeah. So it was anyway, it seemed like it was a good gig to do, and so I was looking forward to it. And yeah, the travel, yeah, 8 years ago it wasn't so bad. Now 8 years later
it's a lot worse now. Yeah. What has surprised you, or what have you learned about Prince Edward County? Because it's remarkable for someone like you that's made so much incredible wine in Niagara, where you didn't know as much about Prince Edward County because you're focused on your own terroir. What surprised you? What have you learned from this area?
I think I learned that grapes mature here. They make great wine. They're a little more focused, I think, because of the terroir here, that the temperatures don't let you grow a lot of grapes that you can grow in Niagara. I think it's a nicely focused area for Chard and for Pinot. We make some incredible Marquette and Petite Pearl here as well, which are up and coming hybrids, as you would say. I love the Chard that comes off the property here, and the Pinot Noir too. You still develop nice texture. You develop that more citrus note to it, and I think they make wonderful wine.
Let's talk a little bit about you. We'll bounce back around a little bit because we're not going to get to everything. For yourself, just doing my own research, where did you fall in love with wine? How much of it was, as you talk about your grandparents owning a farm, where did Derek fall in love with wine?
I guess I fell in love with wine from drinking. I mean, and I started making wine in 1991 when Southbrook, Bill Rettelmeyer, decided to put a winery in Richmond Hill and purchase grapes from Niagara. I started making wine there because I felt I could do it. Mm-hmm. So with very little experience other than drinking. And then we used to joke about it a lot. Where's the experience come from? Between Bill Rettelmeyer and Ian Hanna and myself, who were involved in the wine business there, we had 75 years of accumulative drinking. And we knew what we liked. We knew what we wanted to drink, and so therefore we knew what we wanted to make. I think so my love of wine came from 1976 Riesling from Germany, or 1980 to Bordeaux. I mean, that's where you started to drink a little bit more and learn a little bit more. And
if I can interrupt for a second, let's see. I always joke about this, that everyone who's really into wine, every winemaker at some point mentions German Riesling. It took you 8 minutes and 35 seconds, and we've had our first German Riesling reference of the podcast.
I don't know what else to say.
Damn good.
I still drink a lot of German Riesling, and you know, there's a lot of good Riesling in Ontario, but
there
I
is.
Still go back
there
to
is.
Drinking German Riesling. So
I spent my birthday last year with Marcus Molitor, so.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, it's going to happen. What was the Ontario wine scene like when you got started? You said like 91 in Southbrook with Rittlemeyer. Wow, was just the viticulture, the vinification, but also just the perception and the consistent quality level in 91, so different than what it is in 2023.
100%. It was, I guess, I just gonna say it's different. I mean, I don't want to get into it too much because it was different. We were a young industry growing grapes that we thought were really fine, and making wine that we thought was really fine. And I think it's taken a long while for us to produce wine that the consumers agree with us. I guess if we put it like that, I think that's the evolution that has been very quick.
I mean, it is so different now. I mean, how much Ontario wines, the level of quality, the consistency, how much of it is for the very boring reasons that the vines are older and then just everyone is smarter over the last 20 years about where to grow, what to grow, where to plant, what not to plant? How much of it is just, it just takes, the most boring answer, it just takes years and years of practice.
I couldn't agree more. It just takes time. I mean, and it's also for us a education of the, for the consumer, I think, that that we can tell them how good this is. And, you know, we've done a lot of traveling, I guess, over the last 15 years or so, telling everybody around the world how good our wines are, and they all agree. It still, the hardest part for me is to talk to people over the bar or at an event, and to get them excited about what we're putting in the glass. Because I think we're all excited on the other side of the bar. It's just it seems harder and harder to get people excited still about drinking Ontario wine.
You must feel good knowing that there's so many great owners and winemakers over the last decades that have been a big part of this. But you are part of the tip of the spear of legitimizing Ontario wine. How does it feel for you when you see an article about a Prince Edward County Chardonnay, a Niagara Cab Franc that is winning awards in France, where people can't tell the difference between a Premier Cru Burgundy versus a Carlo Estate, Pinot Noir?
I think it's awesome to think that it's proud. I think being whether it's yours or whether it's somebody else is proud of where we've come from and what we've done in the past 20 years. I still remember those early days for me making Chardonnay. I've always been a big fan of Chardonnay as well as Riesling, but it's something I think that we have done well for a long time. I mean, 100%. I mean, we have done those things well. It's just when people outside of our industry give us that nod and give you those gold medals or those wonderful scores that you get, it does legitimize what we're doing. And I think that we have a lot now, 40, 50 years since we've been doing this as an industry. I think now we've got there, right?
And one way I could tell that we got there, and it's a small sample size. I remember going the other day and just looking at, my cellar and my stepdad. I keep a lot of wine. He's got a proper cellar, and I got a couple hundred bottles there. And I realized 40%+ are all wines from Ontario, and they all I get very excited about. All right, so what are we going to try? By the way, Melville, I drank your Chardonnay. That was incredible. I drank it a little bit fast because I wanted to try some of the Carlo Estates. We'll pause for a second, but if you could tell everyone, what are we going to be trying from this beautiful vineyard?
I brought in a estate Pinot Noir.
Yep.
To taste a new and upcoming grape variety, now VQ8, of course, Marquette.
Yeah.
And one of the things that I think Richard has done in the area, established with a few other friends. I mean, they make a fortified wines here in a port style,
right?
Made from hybrid grapes in general. And we don't have to drink them all, obviously, but I think that they're sort of three wines that stand out in the county and certainly stand out for Carlo and in what they've done over the past about 15 years or so.
We'll put down the mics for a second, and we'll try whatever the winemaker wants to open.
Awesome.
We'd love to try. We are back here at Carlo Estates with, I know you hate hearing it, but famed winemaker Derek Barnett. I know you don't want to hear it. It's the basic truth. And you're pouring the Estate 2019 Pinot Noir. And this is like just big and brooding and dark fruit. What do you get from this wine that you were a big part in the making of it?
It has amazing color, depth of color, which
I
never used to think I expected from Prince Edward County. I was always thinking they'd be a bit lighter. This has incredible color. It has massive sort of sweet red fruit. But I mean, I say red fruit, but it's really cooked, sort of not fresh red fruit, not fresh strawberry, not fresh cherry. It has a little bit of that cooked character to it. And it's got a really nice acidic balance. And 19 was a crappy year.
Yep. Good for you for admitting it, because you go to some places, every year was an exceptional year.
Every year is brilliant, right? Yeah. I mean, you've got to sell this stuff.
Yeah.
But it's this was just one of those vintages that showed so well here. Late harvest.
When did you pick? When was this one after
Thanksgiving? So it would have been sort of 13th, 14th. I don't remember that. It was so clean and so fresh. There was no need for sorting, hand harvested, and it's just turned into an amazing, amazing wine. It's 19, so it's 4 years old. Not showing any sign of any aging.
No,
whatsoever.
No, not at all. This would be a good wine to, when you want to fool men of my age and older that are set in their ways about the wines they buy. They look at Ontario, oh, Ontario Pinot, that's going to be light. This wine here could fool so many people that have yet to stray away from countries that a world war was fought in.
It is what I mean, I'm going to say one of the better Pinots that I think I've made in the last 32 years. I mean, we've made some fine Pinots at Lely. We made some fine Pinots at Melville in the last couple of years. But, I mean, this to me is a standout of all the Pinots I've made.
It's really good. And it's one thing, and we'll talk about it. It's funny with the Carlo Estates. What you guys are doing, you're using so many other grapes. You're doing so many other Bordeaux blends. We'll get into that. But it seems to me that like Prince Edward County was born and designed for Burgundian wine.
Exactly. I think we should all remember that. I mean, we keep trying to grow things in all over the province, really, I suppose, that really seem to fit but don't fit temperature-wise, just the climate. You want consistency in what you can make. You want consistency for the consumer. They don't want to come back a year later with another vintage that doesn't compare to the last one. There's always variation from vintage to vintage, but you kind of want that consistency. So I think Burgundian wines here, Burgundian styles of wines here, are how it should be. And I mean, I got to be honest, these things grow awesomely well here. Mm-hmm. Marquette and Petite Pearl.
And we'll try that in a second.
And the Frontenac varieties. But I mean, to get the consistency out of Shards and Pinots is dynamite here.
And there's so many really good producers, and certainly Carlo Estates is right at the top. All right, so now that we're having nice wine, let's have the non-nice conversation. What the fuck happened at Lely? I'm not going to lie to you. Lely Vineyards, when I was going up to be when I was getting my diploma for WSET, Lely was the first place that shocked me that they could make 100% Cabernet Sauvignon that was really good. And then I fell in love with them. Like all the other wine people that are in the industry, everyone loved Lely, everyone loved you, and we bought your wines. And when I found out it got sold to some foreign investment, it was like a funeral in the Ontario wine scene. You can talk as much or as little as you want. I don't want to put you on the spot, but my Lord, that was a dark day in on the Ontario wine world. I'm sorry. I don't mean to do it like this. You know what, Derek? Honestly, you know what, I think I've been holding this in for so long. It's like God damn, we were so angry. So
life
angry.
Evolves, eh?
I know. And by the way, I've interviewed the new owner. I'm so excited about what's going on with Lely now and the new projects. I'm thrilled. But there's still those wounds of what the hell happened back in the day.
Life happens. I don't get into it. I mean,
that's fine. That's fine.
It's good. It's all good.
We can just talk about Melville. We can just get into we can get your next project. I just needed to get it on the record, sitting with Derek Barnett, that man, there was a lot of people that loved Ontario wine that were really bummed out. How about I say it like that?
I was very, very sad.
Yeah.
To be honest, I mean, incredibly sad that it went that way. But that was what the business partnership wanted. That was the way it had to go.
That's fine.
At the end of the day, things changed, and I did not want to stay on after it had been sold. So hence we have now another evolution of Derek in the wine industry. It was very, very sad, and to see how it has gone. I'm happy to see it back. Mm-hmm. And I'm happy to see that cool evolution happening there, and we'll have to see what comes back once the new vineyard is established.
I'm hoping 10 years from now it feels and tastes similar to what it was when you were making wine there. How tough was that period for you, that your slight unemployment and those days before you went on with Carlo Estates, before you started making your own delicious wines? And a shout out to Melville. If people out there and see it, go and pick up these wines. Amy and I, we found it, my girlfriend Amy, we found it at the restaurant on the Toronto Islands. And that was my first experience with these wines. And this was even, I kind of knew who you were, but we tried these wines like, oh, these are kicking ass good wines. So what was those days like for you between the end of Lely and the start of the next part of Derek?
Was also a little bit of a what do I want to do? Where do I want to go? We'd thought about our own label, my wife and I, Judith, for some time, but that never came to be. And we had a long discussion one day on a drive home from Myrtle Beach as to where what we would like to do. Melville, of course, was my family home back in the UK that I grew up in, and that was the name of the house. And I wanted something that was a little bit about history as far as the wine label that I was making. And as I tell everybody, it comes from M for Malcolm, E for Edwin, L for Lucy, D for Derek. That was the family of the Barnetts. We lived at Melville and in this little town of Swinford, and that's how it came about. It was a tough decision to start. I'm not a young fellow, so it was tough to begin something new at the age that we were at. And we had this long discussion in our house about, you know, what do we want to do with retirement? Well, we're still not retired. And
are you ever going to retire?
Likely not. I mean, I. It's what gets me out of bed in the morning.
Yeah.
I mean, I love making wine. It's this time of year. I mean, we talk about, you know, you come out of the winery this afternoon and the sun is starting to set and the colors and the beautiful time of year. Well, it also comes with walking into the production building and all you can smell is fermenting juice, right? I mean, walking into Carlo's production building this afternoon, it was amazing. There is some Merlot and some Malbec fermenting away and it smelled absolutely wonderful. And into Legends, where I make my wine this morning, I mean, the same deal. I mean, there is some Merlot fermenting there, not for me, but there's some Viognier of mine fermenting there, and there is a little bit of Sauvignon Blanc finishing up. I mean, it's just a special time of year, and my hands are still purple from this morning's punch down.
I need to tell everyone listening, they are still purple from today's punch down.
That's right.
Which, by the way, whenever anyone wonders why am I spending this much money on wine, know this. The famed winemaker who could probably retire has got his hands dirty in Punchdown. You may be drinking a bottle of wine that was punched down directly by Derek Barnett.
The story really goes in the house. If I can't do it, I don't want someone else to do it for me. So hopefully I can keep punching down for as long as I want to make wine. That's as simple as that.
You've mentioned your wife a bunch of times. How important is she to your own journey? Because you mentioned about you had conversation with her about joining Carlo Estate, about retirement, about making wine, about this or that. How important is it for you to have her on your side?
100%. I couldn't do it without her. And I mean, it sounds cliche, but I mean,
it's cliche for a reason.
My whole life of working, whether it was at Donhead Farms, which was before Southbrook with the Rettelmeyer family, or whether it's at Lely or now with what I do at Carlo and another couple of wineries and Melville. I mean, hours are long and, you know, days off weren't very often from April till Christmas. And she supported me all through that, and now with this, I mean, would she like to go and sit on the beach for a couple of months in the winter months in Florida? Mm-hmm. I'm sure she would, but I mean, she says that she's never complained once about me wanting to continue doing this, and she supports everything that I have done. So much appreciation for that.
You mentioned Merlot. I've heard you say Malbec. What do you find most interesting about making wine from grapes that sometimes can have a difficult time fully ripening in this terroir?
We grow Malbec and Carmenère here. The other
you grow Carmenère here.
The other Bordeaux varieties we grow from we purchase from growers in Niagara. Mm-hmm. Malbec is always the fun variety. Some years it's really good. Some years it's not so good.
Yep.
Just you need that long growing season, and there comes a point where you have to pick so that vines can be going to sort of dormancy before you hill them up, and so there is always a time constraint on when we should pick them. Carmenère, Carmenère. Other than its winter, hate of winter, it does ripen here quite well. Malbec, on the other hand, as I say, some years does, some years doesn't. But you always know that you've got your nose in a bin of Malbec, even if it's made by Carlo grapes or somebody else's in Niagara. There is this weird strawberry, and I'll use the same thing, like straw. I remember harvesting wheat in when I was at Donhead and at Southbrook, and there'd be that smell of wet straw the morning after you'd harvested the grain, and I still smell that smell of wet straw in been a fermenting Malbec or in a glass of Malbec that's been made from grapes in a really cool climate. There is that about it, but it's always difficult. And balancing again, acids is the one thing we balance. I mean, fruit we can always get, flavor we can always get. It's that freshness, that crunchiness, which is always difficult.
I'll ask you about blending and just about how different is it for you making some of the Bordeaux blends here versus when you're doing just a straight Chard or straight Pinot. But we'll try one of the other wines. And again, that 19 Pinot, just stewed red fruit, like just this, yeah, it's not fresh, and that's not meant to be a bad thing. Like, that is a serious brooding full body Pinot Noir that would confuse the hell out of anyone that has certain stereotypes when it comes to Ontario reds. But we'll try another wine in just a moment. So as we left off, we're going to try, and we'll talk about the Marquette from Carlo Estates in a second. But for you, how much of a challenge, how much did you enjoy, Derek, when you're blending, when you're taking these, you know, some of these grapes from Niagara, some of the grapes from Prince Edward County, you're vinifying it all here at Carlo Estates. But when you are now blending some iconic Bordeaux blends that Carlo Estates has made a name for themselves with.
It's always a challenge getting the right percentages, and it takes a lot of bench trials. I mean, but at the end of the day, we use a little bit of homegrown Carmenere and homegrown Malbec blend in. They've always got a little bit of that crunchiness to them, that fresh fruit that you feel like you're biting into something you've just picked off the tree or the bush, which helps, I think, with the with the blending of the more ripe varieties that we bring up from Niagara. But it does take some time to get that working for you, and something you really want to put into the glass. Because again, same theory as always, I like to make wine that I like to drink, so it's important for me to get it right.
All right, I'm going to give you three choices, so you have to pick gold, silver, and bronze. Are you ready?
Okay.
All right, what is more difficult, Bordeaux blending, making Pinot Noir in the county, or the commute from St. Catharines to Wellington? You got to pick.
There's one reason that I didn't get upset with COVID, because I continued to commute through COVID up and back, and that was a joy.
Yeah.
Now, man, I've had some five-hour commutes. I've had, today's wasn't so bad. It was 3.5 hours, but it's tough. You'd have to say that always the toughest thing is getting the Pinot Noir right.
Yeah.
Getting it how you want it, year in, year out.
Why is it so hard? Everyone always uses the term, oh, it's a heartbreak grape. We hear the cliches and this or that. But from someone who's made wine for ages in so many different terroirs throughout Southern Ontario, what is it about Pinot that makes it such a son of a bitch?
For me, it's about texture and about the prettiness of Pinot Noir. And I like texture because I like a little bit of viscosity on the palate. But I also like that floral note in all of them. You know, we talk about purple. I always talk about purple. More so in Niagara, I think about purple. But up here, we still get the same thing. There's that little bit of dark red rose on the nose, or it's a little bit of violet. It's a little bit of lilac. It's always there. And I want it to be that every time I make it. And so some years, obviously, it doesn't work. In the hot years, it's even, I think hot years are a little bit harder for us to get that sort of elegance and prettiness of Pinot Noir.
Because you're
why 19 was again a little bit like 2009, you know?
Right.
A little bit cooler.
So it's funny because, and excuse the nerdy wine talk, but 20, hotter year, easier for the grapes to ripen, so easier for the cabs, easier for things like that. But for a Pinot, that can be trickier when it seems like it's a great year because it's a hot year, but then you're worried that it's going to rob away the elegance.
Well, that, and we get a little more tannin production. It seems to me that hot years give us more tannin in Pinot. So I just want that. I love those cool vintages. I remember 2009 at Lely. I remember having a harvest dinner before. And it was the Saturday of the Thanksgiving weekend, and then the whole family was there, the Lely family, and we went and picked grapes on Pinot Noir on Thanksgiving Monday. Kids picked, everybody picked. There was no reason to throw anything away. Every bunch was perfect, and it was just, there was no breakdown as there often is in Pinot Noir. It was a beautiful day, and that those cooler vintages are always sort of much nicer to make.
How many of those 2009s do you have down in your cellars?
I have six left.
What do you
say? I have six of Lely's, and yeah. I have three of, we used to have one called Lot 48 that came from the one of the Wismer properties, and I have three of those left. And I hate opening them, but I have to have friends as well. My wife doesn't drink red wine, so it's kind of hard to enjoy.
She doesn't drink red wine?
No.
Oh, my God, she loves you so much because she's not on the beach, and she doesn't even get to benefit from some of the brilliance of your work.
That's why you have to make great Chardonnay for
Yeah. So that's the motivation for great Chardonnay.
For sure.
So, okay, I want to get on the Marquette in a second, but I got to follow up one more time. So one of those 09... Lely Pinot that everyone in the family went to pick during Thanksgiving. When are you opening the next bottle? What needs to be the occasion for one of those bottles to be opened?
Christmas. I mean, it's coming.
Perfect.
Again,
yep.
Right?
Yep.
Gotta have turkey and a bottle of Pinot. I mean, and that's perfect. I think that's what's on the menu.
I love it. No, that's a perfect answer. By the way, it's the same thing with my cellar. I share it with my stepdad, and when it's the Christmas or Thanksgiving or a birthday, it's like, okay, let's go get the best bottles. Go
exactly.
Get that, because I hate these people that want to use their wine for investment. I've never done that. Every bottle is an emotional investment. Mm. None is meant to be to try to make an extra $80 on a wine I bought a year earlier.
It's awesome. We opened a 2010 Meritage at an event earlier this year from Lely. I mean, it was just one of those things you need to open it on those special events. It was my 50th wedding anniversary, so it was just a special day for that.
Yeah.
I mean, and I remember the day, of course, but you remember the wine you drank at the same time, right?
It's so true. My 41st birthday was an old Ausson that we had at the Drake here in Prince Edward County.
Yes. Yeah.
So I always remember the wine. All right, with the Marquette. I've talked to people that say, please don't call it a hybrid. It's a cool climate varietal, which part of that's marketing. And by the way, that's fine. Whatever you can do to sell the wine. So explain to people the Carlo Estates Marquette, because this is a grape that's going to maybe confuse. I don't want to say confuse people, but it's not a wine they're normally used to seeing.
You're right. It's I treat it like Bordeaux. So I treat it fairly long skin contact through fermentation. It has a nice... Not too much tannin, but it's always there. It has a really crunchy acidity again when it's first in bottle. Has a little real freshness to it. It's got a lot of strawberry, a lot of overripe raspberry flavor to it. Really red fruit, but ripe red fruit. I think it makes a great bottle of wine. I think it's a perfect climate for growing Marquette. I think there should be acres upon acres upon acres of Marquette grown in the county. Because I think people enjoy it. Makes me salivate. It makes me want to eat some of this this food on the table here. But
the problem is that because it's considered like a hybrid, so it's considered cheaper, and then sometimes it's not given the care it deserves. This is a real, like, the nose on this Marquette is fantastic. I'm not going to say the vineyards. I've tried some Marquette from other places in Ontario where it felt like an afterthought. This wine here does not feel like an afterthought.
This particular spot for growing Marquette, it's been very, very consistent. I mean, and always get a little more bricks at harvest in the hybrids. I mean, so this is sort of up there, 13.5% alcohol, but which gives it some richness, some texture. But it just ripens to perfection. It makes a great bottle of wine. Age-worthy, I think, although we haven't had the opportunity to age them much more than 5 years yet. But the five-year-old Marquettes that I have at home, they're still drinking amazingly well. They're still fresh. I think it's a special wine. And I think this is an area. I also work for a winery up on the other side of the province, just north of Grand Bend, Schatz Winery. I mean, they grow great Marquette up there, too. Very, very similar in style. I think for those areas outside of the warmer area of Niagara, I think it just performs incredibly well.
We'll get your final thoughts and some final thoughts on Carlo Estate in a second, and we'll try the final wine right after this. Now, here's the fun part, is that the final wine we are trying with Derek Barnett is a fortified Syrah, like one barrel's worth or so of it. Derek, true or false, you said you haven't... When was the last time you tried this wine?
Before it went into bottle. I mean, out of the barrel. Before.
So you've not tried this in bottle?
No.
All right. So your thoughts, and for the audience, I gave you 11 seconds ahead of time. So what is this? What are you nosing through this wine? What are we drinking?
It's got this really cool blackberry, black raspberry, cooked blueberry pie sort of characteristic on the nose. Palate's the same, and a little bit of acidity. I mean, it's got a residual sugar that's 90 grams per liter, but it's got this wonderful freshness, acidity. It makes you salivate very, very quickly. I need some dessert almost to have with this. There's none on the table.
We should say shout out to everyone here in Colorado States. We got this crazy charcuterie board. There is little things of chocolates. And chocolate goes with almost no wine. Anyone who says chocolate goes with red wine, they're lying to you. I'm going to tell you right now, they are just lying to you.
You don't think those 16.5%, 17% alcohol Zinfandels could do some chocolate?
They could, but if I'm drinking those... Okay, no, I'm
no,
not
no,
gonna,
so we
I'm not going to be snobby, but most of those wines are rubbish. So I'll say, you don't need to say it, I'll say it for you. You know, the mass-produced California wines with 18 grams, those wines usually have 18 grams per liter of sugar anyway. You don't need chocolate to
go
with it. Yeah.
This is kind of a fun glass.
It is. I call this serious fun.
You're right, because it's got a little bit of that pepperiness on the finish, which you expect from Syrah.
Mm.
I think it's a cool bottle of wine.
Yeah. Right now, people need to know that you're looking at the lineup, or excuse me, at the cover of the wine. What are you looking at?
Yeah. No, I just
the label. I don't like calling it the cover.
It's from a very, very hot vintage. Yeah. And a fine vintage of 2016. So this was like 4 years in barrel.
Mm-hmm. Oh wow.
As well. So it is. Mm-hmm. It's got that. It's old French oak, so it doesn't have a lot of woodiness, but it has that little bit of oxidative note to it, which I think is kind of cool. Yeah, that was 4 years in wood.
I'll leave with two questions. What should people know about Meadville? Well, and I know it's such a big open question, but we've always enjoyed your wines, but for people, we can see them every now and then, the LCBO, or they might see them on a restaurant list. What do they need to know?
What do they need to know? We're a small winery, virtual winery, making my wines at Legends Estates. I make a lot of small lots. I started out wanting to make just four grape varieties, so Pinot Noir and Cabernet Franc and Chard and Sauvignon Blanc. Two of those are always kind of fun to make, and two are always a little bit more of a difficult sell. But I now make like 10 or 11 SKUs, maybe 12 some years. A little bit of Viognier, a little bit of Riesling, and on and on. Again, wanted to make this be a fun thing for me as well as being something to do, I guess. I mean, that sounds kind of bad. Like, why are you doing this? I love making wine. I love selling wine. I love visiting restaurants. I mean, all of my wine is sold either at retail, about 20%, and about 80% to restaurants from one end of the province to the other. I want to make wine. I want to drink. So, I mean, the Chardonnay was, we had it earlier.
That was great.
It was a heavier, sort of richer style.
Yeah.
We also make one that's a little bit lighter style. Still barrel fermented. I do a little bit of Syrah now. I've done for a while because I made Syrah from 2003 vintage through to the end of Lely. I love making Syrah so long as we can buy it from the right location, vineyard site. Yeah, it's just I make 1,600 cases a year, and I've just had a good time continuing what I love to do. That's really what it is.
Well, I need to get you back on because I need to ask you four different questions about Syrah sites. But I want to end with this. For Carlo Estates, the Pinot speaks for itself. That's a big, brooding, classically well-made Prince Edward County Pinot that I think maybe a lot of people know and they come to expect. What should people expect from the Bordeaux blends here? Because there's a lot of them and they're high-end wines. There's been a lot of press written about them, and these are wines that take time and attention and care. What do people need to know about that?
I think they're going to need to know. We're trying to make elegant wines. We're trying to make wines that are built for aging as well as for drinking today with a little bit of decanting. That's the whole goal. We want to make wines we like to drink. I mean, I think that Saxon Sherry would say the same thing. We like doing what we do. We like to carry on the dream, I think, of Rich, what Richard had for this for this operation. And I think we try to do every year. But they're fine wines that are made in a I'm gonna say European style because I like a little bit of that funk, if you want, in the wine. So that's what we should expect.
Derek, really appreciate it. This has been a thrill for me. I'd love to chat with you later on down the road, but I love your journey. I love your story. You've had highs and lows, but I just love the fact that just your passion for wine. You could retire, be like, no, this is what I love doing. I love making wine, talking about wine, selling wine. You're a testament to the industry. You're such an important part in the story of Ontario wine. And thank you for doing the podcast.
Oh, thank you very much for the invite to come and do it. It's awesome.
Everyone, again, check out Carlo States. Check out Meldville. Check out anything that Derek Barnett is doing. That is it for me. I got some more good stuff coming up with Carlo States. I'm Matthew Cause. You've been listening to the Matt Talks Wine and Stuff with Interesting People podcast. Remember, you can find me on Apple, Spotify, and wherever quality podcasts are sold.
Thanks for listening to the Matt Talks Wine and Stuff with Interesting People podcast. Happy hunting.